This is the Absolute Business Mindset Podcast, created and hosted by Mark Hayward. This podcast will interview entrepreneurs, business owners, and people in their careers. We will delve into their journey to success, key life milestones, and go deep into their area of expertise. Get ready to learn from other successes and failures. Today, we have again Chris Marhefka. I got it right. And we're doing a second interview because we went really deep into Chris's backstory. So we're going to pick up in part two as he is the CEO of Training Camp for the Soul. So why don't you, Chris, thank you again for joining me. Why don't you go straight into telling me what the camp is and what you do there?
Yeah, absolutely. I started alluding to it in part one, where I talked about this program that I did that really changed everything for me. And, it was January, 2019, and it just so happened to be this program, Training Camp for the Soul. I went through it as a client first and now run it as CEO and with my partner and the founder and not Perry. And what we do is teach people systematically how to create real lasting transformation in their life. And what that means is that we look at people's lives like a movie. And we are all the producer, the main character, the lead actor or actress. And we're also the writer, the director. And we teach people how to step into those roles of director and writer where they have just been playing out this movie. And a lot of people aren't even aware that that's the case, that they can actually change the lines in their script. And so we teach people systematically how to do that. And it leads to real lasting change in people's lives. So if people aren't happy with the relationships in their life, they can change those. If they aren't happy with their purpose or what they're doing for work in the world, they can change that. If they aren't happy with their health and their body, they can change that. If they aren't happy with just their general self-confidence, their self-esteem, the judgment of themselves, we can change that. Those are all the foundation of our work is that all of those things, the what you learned about yourself in the world, are all learned behaviors. They're learned thoughts. We've been programmed in a way, and we just teach people how to rewrite the programming so that they can live the lives that they actually want rather than the lives that they were handed. We are all handed this movie script from mostly our parents, but also like the country we were born in, whatever culture or government, whatever school system, whatever religion, those all form this thing we call our identity. And that identity, most people live their whole life thinking that it's fixed. And we just teach people how to pick apart the parts that they inherited that aren't good for them. Like a lot of people inherited, I'll use a couple examples. A lot of people inherited like obesity in their family. Both their parents were obese. Everyone around them was overweight. And so it's those things get passed on. Like maybe it's alcoholism. Maybe it's just not believing in yourself. Maybe it's everyone in your family has not gone after their dreams and they talk about them all the time, but they never take action. And that's something that we all take on. We take on these things over the years. And it's the most empowering work that I've ever done personally and the most empowering work that I've ever coached because it gives people control back in the creation of their life. And for a while, you're not really in control. You're just a child growing up and then you're kind of like we were talking about before we press record, you're just you do whatever your parents tell you to do. Basically you eat this, you eat that. And then eventually, some people wake up to the fact that they can start choosing their life. And, a lot of people, haven't yet gotten to that point. They're just following out what they've been told is the right way to live, or this is how you should be.
So using your movie analogy, are you telling or like helping guiding your guys on your course that they are the main actor, or are they the producer? How does the roles go? I assume you would go into detail about that, but do you always say that the individual is the leading actor, and there's other people that can help influence, direct, or produce it? How does that analogy break down?
Yeah, so I would say the majority of people's waking hours, waking moments are spent playing the main character, and the main character is the one that you're seeing on screen. They're living the life, they're going to the job, they're doing the things, and it's most people just live like almost not realizing that the movie is happening and that they're being filmed in it. The first step that we do is we almost like take a step back and look at the fact that we are a movie. We are a character operating in our environment. And so when you take a step back, you then become the director and you're looking at what's filming. So you're watching it all happen. And this is, you can get to that point in many ways. Sometimes it's just the awareness that's happening. Sometimes it happens in meditation for people or other things that separate themselves from their just day-to-day beingness. And that's a really important concept, because when you realize your consciousness back here, the director can actually watch you doing things. And when you realize that, you're almost like taking a step out of being in front of the camera to going behind the camera. And then once you have that separation, you can start to direct the main character to do different things. So for instance, like maybe you're in the scene and normally the scene is someone says something to you and you snap right back at them and you get aggressive, and you can change that line of code to not respond that way, but maybe respond with more curiosity or a question or more kindness. And I use that example because that's a common one that we're seeing in the world right now, is that a lot of us are just programmed that when our ideas are challenged, we believe that people are challenging us. That's actually not the case. And so we can actually rewrite with the director can be like, okay, instead of responding angry, let's respond with kindness or curiosity or compassion for this person. And I'm saying it like really simply. It's not a simple just like conscious change. It actually happens a lot deeper than that, because this is something that's programmed deep in you.
Do you talk about past events as with the movie analogy? Do you
100%.
Go, yeah. And you sort of break down and in what do you assess how people responded, if they responded aggressively or negatively? You do recaps on previous parts of their lives.
Definitely. That's actually one of the most powerful parts of our work, is that we focus a lot of the emphasis on the ages between 0 and 7. Wow. The reason why is that is when by the time we hit 7 in our prefrontal cortex, aka our adult thinking mind, rational mind comes online, most of our identity is already formed. And so what that means is that your identity was formed before you could actually reason and ration and choose. And so that's important, because most of the things that people are doing that was conditioned early in life doesn't actually make sense. Some people are even aware that they do things that are not good for them or that they don't like about themselves, but they just keep doing it. And the question comes up, this was one that I kept asking myself all the time, is like, why do I keep doing this? Like, why is this the thing? This is as I had more awareness. And the question of why kept coming up. And so the answer to that why is we take people back to through a process of just kind of like a guided visualization, where they're not in their thinking mind. They're more in like their recall mind. And We take them back to events that happened that have impacted the way they are today. And the way that the programming works, this is like really a really cool concept to learn. And when something happens in our life that changes our operating script, it's the general word for it is a trauma. Trauma has a stigmatism to it, but we've all experienced some forms of trauma. Trauma is when I cut my finger with a knife. That's physical trauma. And all that means is that the body sends resources to my finger to heal it. And if I have the capacity, the immune system to heal it, everything's fine. I go on with my life and nothing's changed. But if for some reason I don't have the capacity to deal with it in that moment, then it festers and it gets worse and it grows. And the same thing happens with our emotional and our mental bodies as well. Is something happens, and as a child, if we don't have the capacity to like understand it or get past it, that becomes now like a thing for us. So I'll use a really simple example. This is a story from my life that I think tells this story that it blows people's minds. But one of the strongest foundations of my identity was I didn't fully trust people. And the way that played out for me was that I learned to be fiercely independent and to take care of myself and to always be the one to do things. There is a gift in that I learned to be very fiercely independent. What was showing up in my life, though, was that I didn't ever fully trust my employees or people that I worked with. And so I would always be stepping over top of them to do things or not really giving them full responsibility. It showed up in my romantic relationships my entire life, where I didn't fully trust someone to like let them in a very vulnerable way. It showed up in my friendships. I never really got close with people. It was always at a distance. And I didn't even know it was happening. That was the thing. I didn't know it was happening until I became aware of it. And in this process, this program, I was in this session and Anat was guiding me, and I got back to this experience to where there was actually two for me, ironically. And that can be common for people because, I'll explain why after. But the first one was I was a four-year-old. I was on a soccer field. And this was a memory I didn't even know that I had. And I was on a soccer field just playing, and the game or the scrimmage or practice ended. And I just had this experience, this very visceral experience of being standing next to the coach, and all the other kids were getting picked up and everyone was happy and joyful. They were hugging their parents and everything. And then the experience of like looking around, and I was the only one left and I didn't see my dad anywhere. And so in a 4-year-old child, they don't have reason and rational. They don't understand that. And so the immediate thing that comes up is fear. It's like, oh, I've been abandoned. Like, oh no, like people aren't going to be there for me. And this is a story that starts forming inside of this child's mind. And meanwhile, what really happened is dad just thought it ended 5 minutes later. He walked 50 feet over to watch my sister play on the field next to us. And he comes over maybe 5 minutes later. And everything's fine for him. Everything's fine for the coach. But internally, there's like this storm that's brewing. Mm-hmm. And it, rather than being this happy, joyful moment, it was like this contraction where I was like, oh, I can't trust people. And that formed the initial trauma that told me to like keep people at a distance and like use like almost like this like keen judgment eye of people to see if I could really trust them. And that's how I lived my life after that. And what happens is from that point forward, this is where it's like, we're such powerful beings. The ego mind then seeks evidence to support that belief.
Right, right.
So that's what I see. Yeah. This is the really important point, because that could have happened to another kid standing right next to me. and they may not have the same exact experience. They may be nothing happens. That's the, this is the important lesson, is that it's not about the event. It's about what the child or the person makes that event mean.
Yeah.
And
it's a really, powerful point, because my wife is a therapist, and part of what she works with people is talking to the inner child.
Yep.
And she, we've sort of spoken about this, and she says it, as you said, it's before the rational brain kicks in, and it's an emotionally driven. So she doesn't do it very often, but we have had it in the past where she's like, well, tell me what your little child is thinking. That will give you the emotions of what has happened rather than the events or even your thoughts, to a point of what has actually happened. Go to the inner child. And so I can see that, I can see the value, because as I said, she often refers people back when they've been in trauma or they've had something, a big event in their lives. If you go back to your sort of 6 year old and work out what they're thinking, it can be powerful. Now, we could go in lots of different directions, but I want to sort of keep track, because there's a couple of questions that I really want to ask you. Masculinity.
Yeah.
So what is your view on masculinity in 2021?
Yeah, great question. The first thing I always say when this topic comes up is that there's a lot of misconceptions about like masculine and feminine energies and men and women. There's a lot of discussion about sex and biology and all these things. When I talk about masculine and feminine, I'm talking about the naturally occurring energies that happen in all beings, in all of nature, in each one of us. We have both masculine and feminine. However, when most people bring this up in the topic of discussion, it usually relates to men, and usually like the unhealthy behaviors of men. Because usually what we're seeing when we're seeing an unhealthy masculine is, the best way I can describe the difference between healthy masculine and unhealthy is, if you take an action and it harms someone, it's unhealthy. If it helps someone, it's healthy. And most of us, especially if they're listening to this podcast, were raised in a highly masculine world. Most of the developing world is highly masculine. And what I mean by that is that it's a very like driven, forceful, like penetrating energy, where it's like, go out, take this, do this. In a lot of ways, like capitalism is very masculine. And there's a lot of gifts in that. But also when it's done in the harm of others, that's what we're seeing right now, is we're seeing like a lot of leaders and people in power are just abusing that power, harming a lot of people for their own benefit. And so when I talk about like masculine and feminine, it's oftentimes in relation to healing those parts of ourselves, because both have value. Mm-hmm. What's interesting is that when I travel, there's a lot of cultures that aren't highly masculine. In fact, they're more balanced, or maybe they're a little bit more feminine. And it's, I think, what we're seeing as a collective society in the developed world with a lot of unhealthy masculine examples is just because we've skewed too far in that direction, and we've forgotten the value of the feminine.
It's really interesting you say that, because when I started asking this question, or when I thought about, when I was doing the research and thinking about this question, I thought it was going to go in a completely different direction. And the reason why I say that is, I think, and this is a very personal opinion, I'm probably going to get shouted down by lots of people listening here, but I think men, masculinity and men in Western society now is struggling.
Yes.
Because there's been a backlash with feminism and that sort of... Not that it's a bad thing, but I think some men struggle with their own masculinity, because I think that it's been watered down. The whole aspect of a sort of alpha male sort of situation, there's still most children, dependent on their fathers and sort of role models they've got, but most men, I think deep down, do want to be a little bit more alpha, a little bit more masculine. And I kind of think the extremes of masculinity is where the problem lies. The ones that are too alpha and what you're talking about, which is hurting other people for the pursuit of yourself, versus the other extreme of helping absolutely everyone and not helping yourself. So I'm really intrigued on your view on that, because I kind of see the extremes are where the problem is with masculinity. That I say the majority of people, that's such a huge generalization, but for me, for masculinity, I kind of feel a lot of men have been emasculated, have not been able to develop their own masculine personal self. I wonder what your thoughts on that is.
Yeah, and I'm glad you brought that up, because that's where I think what we're really dealing with is that over the last few decades, the masculinity, and I'm going to lean more towards saying men in general and the masculine part of men, have been beaten down because of some bad examples of how it's happening in the world. And so it's been rejected, it's been suppressed, it's been told that it's wrong. We've been told that masculinity is dangerous. And so what I think is the byproduct is that a lot of men are growing up and like hacking down that part of themselves that is a natural part of all of us. But sometimes on the spectrum, sometimes men skew towards very masculine, but oftentimes we'll like suppress that part because they're told culturally that that part of themselves is wrong. And then it hurts people and it harms people because there are some examples of that in the world. Here's the problem with that is that the masculine is the protector. And it, part of the reason why is that a truly embodied masculine man knows how powerful he is, but when they heal that part of themselves, they direct it towards good. When they're unhealed, they direct it towards harm.
Right.
And so people are afraid, rightfully so, of embodied masculine men. Because they know who they are and they know how much power they have. And so what I usually see in the development of men that have been largely emasculated in a, like you said, most, I would agree, most men have been emasculated, especially in recent generations.
Yeah.
What they're afraid of is they're afraid of the full expression of their power, because they've been told that it's wrong. They've been told that emotions like anger are wrong, and they've suppressed it and bottled it up so much that it causes internal conflict, internal disease. And usually what happens is that that pressurized bottle, that cap flies off because there's too much pressure to hold it. And it happens when we don't want it to. We snap on people we love, we get aggressive, we like it comes out in a way that doesn't, it's not good for anyone.
So I'm thinking Fight Club, the film and the book Fight Club. It what you're talking about, it just a really good sort of reference point in my head, that whole emasculated man who then finds comfort and enjoyment in beating the crap out of each other because it's that they feel they can show their masculinity there as well.
And like people especially in modern culture, like they are so quick to judge and like belittle that type of behavior. But that it can be some of the most healing behavior to allow a man especially to fully express all the energy that's happening within him. And so in my retreats and stuff, like we'll go like bare chest to bare chest and just like push against each other and like roar and like all these things. And you'll have a man come in that is so wound up and literally shaking and anxious because of all the energy that's in them to being this calm, centered presence, man, just because he allowed all of that that had been bottled up to be released in a healthy and safe way.
Yeah.
So we teach people, we teach men and women, but everyone, how to express those rising emotions like anger and frustration. And we teach them how to express it into like yelling into a pillow. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't harm anyone, but it's so helpful for a being to release all that that's inside of them. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you just want to scream at someone and tell them to F off or like do that into a pillow. It's not wrong to have those things. It's actually wrong to bottle them up or to project them onto other people. Yeah. And so we just teach people how to do it so that really it's taking responsibility for what's happening inside of you. And suppression is not the answer and projection is not the answer. Because suppression harms you and projection harms other people.
Yeah. Wow. That's really interesting. Really interesting. You described yourself as a healer.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Why? Well, what makes you feel that you're a healer?
Yeah, that was a label that I like didn't allow myself to identify with for a while. And it was only through me doing some work around like my gifts that allowed me to say that. And when I say healer, I use it to explain what I do for people. The way that I facilitate leads to healing. I'll just put it that way.
Okay.
The way that I facilitate people through this experience will allow people to heal past traumas, generational or developmental traumas. They'll be able to heal stuckness or dis-ease in their body. Because I've learned that, I've learned the process of how to try to explain this so that how to move energy in the body with people and for people so that it is no longer stuck and causing problems from them. And I don't like to get too much into like the woo-woo of energy. But in simple terms, like we're all just energy. We're just denser. And so we can see it. And so the way that I identify with being a healer is teaching people how to move energy within themselves that's causing them problems and disease. And you know, it took me a long time to identify with that. And you can probably tell even in this moment, I'm still a little bit uncomfortable with saying.
Say, this is not your natural, like you've been very eloquent and story told very, very well. It feels, I don't want to make you feel uncomfortable. So, but what's something that I've what you've said is, it's really fascinating because my wife's a therapist and I've been through some therapy. I had multiple bereavements in a matter of sort of 6-9 months. And I had, in your words, energy that was negative energy and loss and all that. Now, it sounds like your environment, you're just using a different method to heal in the same way that therapists use words and expressing their emotions. Mm-hmm. And another analogy, which I think is a really good one, is it's like a massage. So if you have a sports massage, so I sometimes my back sort of seizes up and I get a sports massage, which really loosens it up. That's one way of dealing with sort of tension and sort of stress and all that sort of stuff. But equally, if you went to Southeast Asia, a massage in Southeast Asia is completely different. Or even like a foot massage where they do a foot massage and it triggers other organs in your body. It sounds very much like what you're trying to achieve is in essence the same as what a therapist is trying to achieve. You're just approaching it with different tools, different techniques, different ways of being able to get to that healing state.
Absolutely. And like what you just brought up is the point I like to hit home for everyone, is that there are thousands, unlimited modalities that all work for specific things. And so that's why I think it's really valuable for people to find the thing that's working for them.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, for most people, they only see one option. Like if they have a health problem, they only see one option. There's a lot of options. Mm-hmm. And I think part of the taking back control of your life and taking responsibility for self and is you start to become more aware of that because you now have the capacity to choose for yourself. If you're sitting in a place to where the world is happening to you, it's a lot easier to be told what to do and to do that option. And so what I like to support people with is just opening up their perspective that there's a lot of options out there. And I'm not saying that the way that I do it or this person over here does it is the right way for you, but it's worth people exploring. Yeah. Whether they're dealing with like lower back pain or anything, name any ailment that people don't want in their life. Mm. And, you know, our work that we do has supported people in a lot of like physical injuries, chronic injuries they've had for a very long time that they've gone down the road of a lot of traditional therapies with. And the work that we do has helped that. And I'm not saying that like we're going to cure this and that and that, but like I can't argue with what happens. And so what I do is I do my best to be an invitation for people and to try something different and to try something new. Because most of us, in the same way that we talked about at the beginning of the episode, are told a story of the way things are. We oftentimes buy into it. And I was raised in a very traditional Western culture, lower middle class. Like this is just the way things were done. And when I started getting introduced to like some more, like we said, Eastern or some more ancient or some more just things that are just not common in the Western world, I was like, whoa, this is weird stuff. But then something worked for me. And I was like, whoa. I was like, I can't argue with what's happening inside of my body.
Results.
Yeah.
Results show, don't they? And you can't make them up. Well, you could make them up, but you wouldn't make them up. What's the one practical exercise that all my podcast listeners can do to have an immediate effect? Is it exercise? Is it meditation? Is it Fight Club? I'm joking. What one thing would it be? Exercise? Would it be meditation? Would it be screaming into a pillow? What for you, for male or female, for both of us, what for you, one thing that would be a good starting point?
100% without a doubt, it's learning to use your breath to regulate your nervous system.
Okay, how do I do that?
Yeah, so I'll just give you one direction. Slow down. So when people slow down their breath, they breathe deeper into their belly rather than in their chest and their neck and their throat. Breathe lower, breathe slower. It'll slow down how fast you move, how fast you speak, literally how fast the thoughts are flying through your mind. And what that does is that tells the body by signals when we're breathing slowly and deeply that we are safe. That is very, very, very important because the state of feeling safe is what we call our parasympathetic nervous system. That's where rest happens, digest happens, recovery happens, healing happens. That's where the body does all of its normal functions. That is our resting state. That's biologically, we're designed to be in parasympathetic, the stage that I just explained. Mm-hmm. We don't have any natural predators. We are a prey animal. And if you look at prey animals, they spend most of their day lying around, playing, sleeping, napping. They're in parasympathetic unless they need to go out hunting. And then for a very brief moment of time, their senses are alert, they're heightened, everything is firing in their body, adrenaline's flowing through them, and they make the attack, and then it all starts down regulating again. And that's important to realize, because most people right now, especially, their natural state is stressed and overwhelmed. Exactly,
because as a human in Western society, so let's just take an example of a job. You're at a heightened, to a degree, a heightened existence for 8, 10, 12, 14 hours. That's not a lowered, restful state. We've created this, although we don't have prey, although we're not hunted.
We hunt in business, though.
We hunt in business, exactly.
Yeah, we are. And that's the thing, is that I agree with you. The way we've designed most of our lives is not good for us. But we've done it because we've been told this is the way to do it. And now we're seeing we're just a large scale science experiment. And what I saw when I changed the way that I live life, I was happier, I was healthier. I didn't have the same chronic issues that I did that were developing from stress-related behaviors and not sleeping and beating myself up and overworking. Yeah, the way we've designed life is not good for us. And I mean that, like, that's my opinion. But if we look at objective measures of what people are suffering with in mental health and the amount of pharmaceuticals that people are taking for anxiety and depression, if we look at physical factors, like, we are objectively much less healthier than we were 50 years ago. Like, there's no question.
And the stress levels have risen in virtually everyone's lives.
Yeah. Yeah. And what's happening in simple terms is that we're not giving our bodies and our systems the time to do what they're designed to do. Because if you think of it like a switch, it's like we've got the rest switch and the stress switch. Most people are just keeping the stress switch turned on and never flipping back to the rest switch. Yeah. And our breath is literally the mechanism that can flip that switch.
Okay.
And so the more stressed you are, the more often you'll need to do this until you're
saying, rather than a full meditation, just literally slow your breath down would give you positive emotional as well as physical benefits.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I actually, I'm like a very practical, actionable, because I've been coaching people for over 15 years. I started in physical fitness and I've been face to face with over 3,000 clients at this point. And what I know to be true is that if you do one small action behavior, it's going to seem insignificant, but if you do that repeatedly over time, that's going to make more changes than like doing one big grandiose sexy thing, like meditating for an hour one day a week and then not doing it again until next week. Mm-hmm. You're going to have a lot more benefit from just in the moment. I tell people to make it a practice is the moment you wake up, you take 10 deep breaths. Before you start your day, before you rush into your day. Most people start with an alarm. They're already stress responses on. Coffee, stress responses on. Traffic, stress responses on. Work, stress responses on. You know what I'm getting at here is that everything in our life is designed to create more stress. And so the breath does the opposite. It counteracts all these behaviors. So if we're going to continue to choose to live this stressful life, at least do something to combat it.
See, I'm a complete... like I'm on my phone all the time, but this actually doesn't help as well. The phone, I mean, in that you never switch off. Like my kids are never bored.
Yeah.
Like as a child, I was bored at times. There was nothing to do. And I actually think it did me a lot of good to actually be bored. It sounds so stupid. And I know you could, there's a really good argument. There was papers, there was books, there were things that did occupy people. But I do think, so I'm 41, sort of like 35 years ago when I was 5 or 6, there were times where there was nothing to do. Yep. At the end, there was TV, but it wasn't on all the time that it was. I can't argue this point too strongly because I am on my phone all the time and I put my hands up to it. That is one of the things I do. But I do think that whole, I try and implement simple things. For example, I will not look at my phone for the first 30, 40, 45 minutes. I will not turn on the TV or watch anything when I first wake up. I try to, depends on who's doing the kids, but I try to spend a little bit, like feed the kids and sort of talk to them for a little bit before the phone gets switched on. Because once the phone's switched on and I'm not working, but doing emails then I'm a sucker for it. So I try as an exercise to not, for that first hour or so, to not really engage in the sort of digital world, because I just know myself that I will throw myself into it and it'll be an email, it'll be a message or whatever it is. And you find yourself just constantly active and constantly brain active. And the other thing I do, and this is not all about me, but the other thing I do is I really try and give myself a good 8, sometimes 9 hours sleep. Because for me, recovering from the day is massive. And if I have 5 hours sleep, I will be useless for the next day. I really won't be able to physically be at optimal speed. So for me, that 8-9 hours is so critical. So I think something I've learned from speaking to you today is there's many ways to do this healing, to do this supporting, to do this get your emotions out. And it might be some people do the gym and do exercise and they go hardcore and that's how they get clarity. That's how they get their mindset right. Some people might use therapy, might use talking about it and how they do it. Some people might use meditation. And I think you guys, it sounds like you guys use a little bit of all of them.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of honed to what the person needs. Yep. As well. So mm-hmm. I think that's really, really, really valuable. But I do think that whole thing about Eastern and Western for massages, and it's I think such a clear point is that the Western massages is like pummeling you with a sports mm-hmm. massage. But if you go to it Southeast Asia, you'll get a completely different experience and they will use different energies, but they are still using the same method. And for me, I think that's been a real eye opener. So thank you very much for explaining that to me. Right. I asked the same 6 questions to all of my guests when we're coming to the end of the episode. They're the same 6 questions for everyone. They are quickfire questions. They do not need a quickfire answer. But first question is, what's the best decision you made?
Best decision I made was there's so many good ones. Okay, the best decision I made was when I decided to go on the RV trip cross country. The reason why it was the best decision for me is because I was so caught up in my life that I couldn't see anything else. And what that did for the first time in my adult life, it gave me enough space and separation to actually decide, is this the way I want to live my life? And it wasn't like a quick like weekend vacation where I was in and I was out. I like permanently left my life, my physical life. And then I was physically on the outside looking in at it. And it gave me so much space to contemplate and to see what I was happening.
Do you know something? So I've had transformative periods of my life, and they are more than a weekend retreat. Not saying anything about your weekend retreat, sure. retreat, but and because when you were talking earlier about the 6-year-old, I don't always subscribe to that. Because I think I've had transformative parts of my life which have changed my outlook, where I want to go, how I want to pursue it. Mm-hmm. I do get the inner child. I do understand that. But I do think that there are, and it sounds like for you, that transformative, that took you out of the daily grind. It gave you space, gave you perspective, gave you ability to see who you were and what you were doing. So I do think that can't be completely ignored, that people do have transformative stages of their life. Anyway, I'm going off on the tangent. Second question. No. What's the best piece of advice you've been given?
Slow down. Yeah. Period. I was the cliche moving 100 miles an hour. And at 100 miles an hour, I mean, if you think about it, you're driving on a street 100 miles an hour, you don't see anything that's happening on that street.
But
if you take a slow stroll, you see the color of the flowers, you see the leaves blowing in the wind, you see neighbor in the window, like you just see so much more of life, and you can see the beauty of life. You can enjoy life when you're walking. You don't enjoy any of what's passing you by when you're 100 miles an hour.
And you can see it in nature, you can see it in family. You can actually realize you're having a walk with your child or your wife or your mother or whoever, and enjoy spending time with them. Okay, next question. Who's helped you most in your career?
Who's helped me most? My ex-wife first. I would say she was my greatest teacher for sure. And then second to that was my now business partner. She, when I was a client of her, that was the biggest transformation that I ever had.
Right. Awesome. Do you have any regrets?
No. I don't see them as regrets. There are mistakes that I've made that I've had to forgive myself for. And I also know that the culmination of my past has brought me to where I am today, and I'm very happy with the man I am today. So I don't regret any of them. I had some hard lessons for sure, though.
Right. Thank you for your honesty. What are you most proud of?
The man I am today. I am very proud of the way that I show up for myself, my relationships, my clients. I show up as the example of what... I say it all the time. I am the man that I desired to be. And I'm very proud of that, because it took looking inward at some really hard things to make those shifts. And, it was tough. It was a struggle.
Yeah.
But,
I think to a point, everyone's life, there is struggle. There's always bad times. But the bad times give you perspective on when you actually have good times as well. If it wasn't bad, you wouldn't know what good was. So I become a little bit philosophical in my older age in that sense, because as I've alluded to a couple of times with multiple bereavements very quickly, you think you're never going to come out of it.
You're in it.
And I still haven't solved everything that going through. This is in the last 2 years. That sounds cliche, but my daughter laughing at something I said or was playing with her, I wouldn't be able to enjoy that as much as I do if I didn't have the bad time. So I think yes, we're all looking for transformation to a better state, but there's always going to be, it's like a recession. You never know when the next recession's coming, but you know it's coming.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And you have to be prepared for as best you can.
Yep.
But there is always good and bad. What does legacy mean to you?
The impact that we have that lives on after we're physically not on this planet anymore.
Do you have kids? Sorry to be so blunt, but do you have kids?
I don't yet, but... Oh. That is something that is definitely in my future. That's one part of my identity that I do believe will happen in this lifetime is being a father for sure.
Okay. The reason I ask is that's often people's starting point for the legacy question. And sometimes when I'm speaking to some of these like tech entrepreneurs at 25 years old, and you talk about legacy, they're talking about building an empire. Building an empire for a business that outlasts them. And in some cases that is true, but I always, the reason why I asked you was because what you're building is not just financial. You're building something spiritual and something sort of cognitive as well as emotional. So legacy is a weird one. The any regrets and what does legacy mean really splits people. So thank you for your honesty.
So I'll actually share with you, this is appropriate to this, a dream that I've had repetitively. I've had a vision. It's about the work that I do, and it's a world map. And it's like the maps that you see at night where everything's dark.
Yeah.
And then like one light pops up in like whatever corner over here, and it starts shining. And then another one over here, and then another one over here. And then they just start popping like popcorn. And that is how I view my impact and my legacy that I'm leaving on the world. Cause every time someone goes through this work, this program, this work that we do, they literally discover that light. And I think we talked about that light in the first part is when that light starts shining brightly and it gets stronger and stronger, it can't get put out. And it actually, when one person's light shines, it gives people permission around them to then find their light. And it almost happens exponentially.
Yeah.
And that's how I see my legacy in the world is a world map that just lit up with lights popping everywhere.
That's amazing. And where can people find you if they want to reach out to you?
Yeah, me personally at Instagram at Chris Marhefka. I'm pretty active on there. That's, I think, the only platform I use regularly. And trainingcampforthesoul.com. And that's where all the programs that I do are on there. We have in-person retreats. I'm actually about to go to one in 3 days. We also do online programs for people all over the world.
That's wonderful. Thank you, Chris. Thank you for doing both episodes with me. It's been absolutely fascinating speaking to you. Thank you very much.
You're so welcome. Thank you, Mark.
Cheers.